all the expectations that we had about the end of the Cold War by 1991 are gone.
2018 is almost in the history books. What a year it's been. It's Friday, December 28th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, Japan to take up the whale hunt again, social media's year-long slide, and two new movies celebrate one Supreme Court justice, sometimes known simply as Notorious. It's all ahead on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump made an unannounced trip to Iraq to visit U.S. troops this week. The visit took place on the heels of Mr. Trump's controversial move to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria and plans for a drawdown in Afghanistan. VOA White House correspondent Patsy Widukusara reports.
President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump traveled to Iraq to visit troops the day after Christmas, Trump's first visit to a conflict zone as president.
We came to al-Assad to share our eternal gratitude for everything you do to keep America safe, strong, and free.
The secret trip took place in the midst of a partial government shutdown in Washington over funding for Trump's proposed wall on the southern border with Mexico. Last week, Trump made the controversial move of announcing plans to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria after claiming victory over the Islamic State. He also reportedly ordered the Pentagon to withdraw roughly half of the 14,000 American troops stationed in Afghanistan beginning next month. Military officials have warned withdrawal will plunge the region further into chaos. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and the Special Envoy to the Global Coalition Fighting Islamic State, Brett McGurk, have both resigned, citing differences over policy. Speaking to troops in Iraq, Trump defended his decision to withdraw from Syria, again claiming victory over the jihadist terrorist group.
2 years ago, when I became president, they were a very dominant group. They were very dominant. Today, they're not so dominant anymore.
The Iraq visit came one day after Trump wished a Merry Christmas to members of the U.S. military around the globe via video conference from the Oval Office. After the call, Trump was criticized by some media outlets that reported he is the first president since 2002 to not visit U.S. troops at Christmas time. Patsy Widukusara, VOA News.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Thousands of Taiwanese Thursday protested for the third time in a week to demand lower taxes and the fair handling of tax disputes. A separatist leader blamed for last month's attack on a Chinese consulate in Pakistan has been killed in a bombing in Afghanistan. A graft probe into the luxury watch collection of a member of Thailand's junta was dropped, sparking the ire of political opponents. And Pakistan has imposed a travel ban on former President Asif Ali Zardari, while authorities investigate alleged money laundering. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. VOA News, VOA Asia continues. New Year's Day is fast approaching, and with it comes a variety of traditions. In Spain, for example, people eat one grape at each strike of the midnight chime. In Japan, families dine on buckwheat soba noodles to mark the end of the new year. And in North Korea, the supreme leader addresses the nation for the annual reading of the New Year message. Kim Jong-un will soon deliver his address before the massed audience. Analysts will be listening closely for the tone it sets. Our Jim Bertel spoke with VOA Seoul correspondent Steve Miller and asked him what we might hear this year.
To look forward to this year's upcoming New Year's Day address, I think it's important to look back to the 2018 New Year's Day address, which analysts have told me really set the tone for really all of North Korea's actions this year. During the January 1st, 2018 address, Kim declared North Korea a nuclear weapons state and that his nuclear weapons program was complete and thus ordered the productions of more warheads and missiles. both of which we did see during this year, though there have been no nuclear tests or large-scale missile tests in the past year or so. Plus, he also called for the economic development of North Korea, which was a shift away from its father's military-first approach, which began a dual-track approach, which is called the Pyongyang approach. This year, analysts expect Kim to highlight domestic policies and reforms. They also expect an emphasis on economic development, social progress, science, and technology.
Well, we'll talk about the economic parts of the speech in just a moment, but are analysts anticipating a less militaristic speech this year than last?
Well, they're kind of split on that. Some think that because of the stalled talks, Kim may avoid mentioning a lot of the military discussions he had in the past. They think that he may not highlight the nuclear missile programs as a nod towards Seoul and Washington in hopes of energizing talks between North Korea and the United States, with the hope of that denuclearization progress creating a pathway to ease sanctions. Other analysts are telling me that he may actually highlight them to emphasize to the international community the need lax economic sanctions as the only viable way towards Kim giving up his nuclear weapons arsenals. Remember, not that long ago, North Korea said emphatically that it would not pursue denuclearization unless the United States removes what it calls its nuclear threat from the region, meaning weapons deployed in the theater and some, if not all, the troops stationed in South Korea, which has typically been off the table for talks with North Korea by the United States.
Well, now let's turn to the economic part of this speech. Economic development may be a topic on in his address, but there are currently a number of U.S. and U.N. sanctions against North Korea. How do you expect that to be addressed?
Well, you have to remember that during this year, South Korean President Moon Jae-in has really made a push for easing sanctions or relaxing sanctions or making some exceptions to sanctions to bring more business into North Korea as a way to promote greater inter-Korean cooperation as a viable pathway to easing tensions. Now, what we have seen this year with especially the first and third summit between Moon and Kim is a definite easing of tensions with the formal military declaration and process they've implemented. We've seen numerous guard posts eliminated along the DMZ, the demilitarized zone, and we've also seen the joint security area, Panmunjom, become a weapons-free area. So we do expect him to kind of make the push that easing of sanctions is the way to go to kind of promote that way forward to eliminate tensions in the region.
VOA's Steve Miller in Seoul. Happening now in Asia, Bloomberg reports that debt defaults in Asia will spread quickly as weakening currencies and tighter liquidity leave riskier borrowers with higher refinancing costs. Rising failures add to the headwinds that governments have to navigate in 2019 with elections in India and Indonesia. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Japan will withdraw from the International Whaling Commission and resume commercial whaling in July of 2019. This week's announcement was met with opposition from animal rights groups who say that Tokyo is violating international law. Japan says whaling will only be in its own waters and exclusive economic zone. VOA's Arash Arabisadi reports.
This is commercial whaling. The International Whaling Commission, or IWC, banned the practice in 1986. Japan announced Wednesday it was leaving the IWC.
We decided to resume commercial whaling from July 2019 and to withdraw from the International Convention for the Regulation of Whaling.
The decision quickly sparked criticism from Humane Society International, which said Japan will be breaking international law.
The International Whaling Commission agreed a global ban on all commercial whaling on the high seas and in countries' coastal waters. Japan is rejecting that international law. What they will be doing is pirate whaling, and it should be condemned by the international community.
Japan unsuccessfully lobbied the IWC in September to resume commercial whaling.
Countries that focus exclusively on the protection of whales did not agree to take any tangible steps towards reaching a common position, and it became obvious that it is not possible to seek the coexistence of states with different views, which led to this decision.
Since the mid-1980s, Japan granted so-called scientific permits that served as a loophole in the whaling ban to research limited marine resources. Wednesday's announcement to resume commercial whaling and set its own quotas instead of those agreed upon at the IWC puts Japan on a short list of countries that continue the outlawed practice. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And you're listening to VOA Asia.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The Shanghai Composite Index dropped 15 points Thursday following news that state-owned oil company Sinopec has suspended two top officials. Meanwhile, Hong Kong's Hang Seng lost 0.7%. The Nikkei jumped 751 points. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. From the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi to the unprecedented summit between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, 2018 turned out to be a momentous year. The Economist magazine also listed Brexit, French unrest, and the Yemen conflict as among the year's top stories. Jonathan Adelman is a professor of international affairs at the University of Denver. He told VOA's Victor Beatty that events of this and previous years leave him wondering whether the world is going in the right direction.
All the expectations that we had about the end of the Cold War by 1991 are gone. So many of the things that you're talking about were negative or something to even be worried about. You look at Britain, and if Jeremy Corbyn wins, we're going to have an England that is going to be going downhill very fast. In France, we had regular elections, and now we see massive burning in the streets every weekend. We see Saudi Arabia not able to put its act together, that they were trying initially to become not just more friendly to Israel, but to the United States, and now that's all backed off. So that there's a danger here, and I think it's exaggerated, but it's real, that we may not be going in the right direction, in the direction that we hope to move towards democracy, to move towards some kind of neo-capitalism, to move towards prosperity for many countries that had had it before. And so if you really think about it, every time this has happened in history, there's been a reaction. In 1918, everybody said, it's over. It's the war to end all wars, one famous book calls it. And within 15 years, Adolf Hitler was in power, and in 20 years, 60 million people were to die in World War II. And then after World War II, well, it's impossible to happen again. But we got within 2 years, 47, the Soviet Union, and we got a Cold War with nuclear capability. So it hopefully won't happen, but it's just eerily beginning to look like it's possible.
You're forecasting some sort of cataclysm unless we change course.
I don't think it's the majority likely, but it's now for the first time since 1991. It's a real possibility.
Well, then we've talked about trends. Let's talk about some of the big stories of 2018. What stands out in your mind?
Well, I think there's no way, whether you love him or hate him, it's Donald Trump.
So what does 2019 hold for us?
I think, first of all, what's going to happen to Donald Trump? I mean, if you listen to the Democratic Party, he's going to be impeached. He's going out of office. If you listen to the Republican Party, which still controls the Senate and the presidency, they think that it's going to be good. So I think number one is what happens to Donald Trump, because it's very influential on not just Donald Trump's life, but also on what is considered acceptable behavior and what is also good behavior, because Trump also has some very good positives. I think number two is what's happening to Europe. Nobody in the 1990s, seeing the death of the Soviet Union, would have predicted that authoritarian, ultra-conservatives were going to be able to take over. Now, they're not the same people that we thought, but new groups have come up. And that shows one other thing. It's not, it's not just them. It's that what we're seeing indicates that it's becoming acceptable, the far left and the farther right. And that's something that's to be very concerned about.
This news alert from VOA Asia: China's alternative to the American-owned GPS extended its service beyond the Asia-Pacific region on Thursday. Called Beidou, the service works like GPS, providing users precision positioning with an error of about 10 meters. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, 2018, technology firms such as Facebook and Google faced more scrutiny and negative press over their handling of data breaches and online speech. VOA's Michelle Quinn has more.
The question of who can access personal user data through technology caused many people to rethink how much they trust these companies with their private information. At a recent hearing, House Republican Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy grilled Google over accusations it uses algorithms to suppress conservative voices.
Are America's technology companies serving as instruments of freedom or instruments of control? Are they fulfilling the promise of the digital age? Are they advancing the cause of self-government? Or are they serving as instruments of manipulation?
At the hearing, Google CEO Sundar Pichai said he runs the U.S. technology giant without political preference. In October, Google acknowledged that several months earlier it had discovered a data breach involving its Google Plus service, which the company said would be shut down. Pantas Sitarcha, chief executive of data storage company Latticework Inc., says such scandals are forcing the companies to take a closer look at how they manage and protect user content.
2018 has been a challenging year for, you know, tech companies and consumers alike. Company CEO getting called to Congress for hearing, promising profusely they will fix the problems of data breach, but still cannot do it.
Also this year, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg faced tough questions from U.S. lawmakers over a breach that allowed a political consulting firm, Cambridge Analytica, to exploit the data of millions of Facebook users. Zuckerberg apologized to lawmakers, but some legislators say the giant social network cannot be trusted to regulate itself. The year saw new revelations that foreign operatives were using social media to secretly spread divisive and often bogus messages in the United States and worldwide. Walt Mossberg, a former tech journalist, says consumers are frustrated.
It doesn't matter to whose benefit they were operating. It bothers people here that a foreign country using our social networks and digital products and services that we have come to feel comfortable in, a foreign government has come and used that against us.
Data breaches have prompted companies like Latticework to create new ways for users to protect their information and themselves, Sitarcha says.
Despite, you know, apologizing profusely for leaking customers' data, they can't do anything about it because their real master, their boss, is Wall Street.
User data was just one area in which tech companies came under criticism. Under pressure, social media companies tighten restrictions on the kinds of speech they tolerate on their sites. And workers press managers about their company's government contracts and treatment of female colleagues. Mossberg says he wants federal law to limit U.S. internet firms' collection and use of personal data.
These are giant companies now, and there really are four or five of them that control everything. And governments and citizens of countries around the world need the right to regulate them. without closing down free speech. And that's tricky.
Mossberg says he has given up Facebook. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
Finally today, U.S. Supreme Court Associate Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has developed something of a cult-like following, known to her fans as Notorious RBG. Two new movies have captured her life and spirit for moviegoers. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
There are 178 laws that differentiate on the basis of sex. Women can't work overtime.
We have to get credit cards in our husband's name.
We're not allowed to work in mine.
The film On the Basis of Sex follows the challenges Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg faced in a man's world, starting with her first year as a law student at Harvard in 1954.
Welcome to Harvard Law School.
Ladies, let's go around the table and report who you are and why you're occupying a place that could have gone to a man.
The film also looks into her private life as a mother and a wife. At some point, she was supporting her convalescent husband, who had suffered testicular cancer, by attending both her classes and his at Harvard. Daniel Stiepelman, the film's screenwriter and Justice Ginsburg's nephew, told VOA that apart from Ruth Bader Ginsburg's legal acumen and her inroads to women's rights, he wanted to share his firsthand experience of Justice Ginsburg's equal partnership with her husband, renowned tax law attorney Martin Ginsburg.
My wife and I have always looked to Aunt Ruth and Uncle Martin as our role models for what a marriage is supposed to be like. They shared the load raising their kids and getting food on the table and taking care of the house, and we knew that that's how we wanted to be as well.
You've been ready for this your whole life, so go in there and let the judges see the Ruth Ginsburg I know.
Actor Armie Hammer interprets Martin Ginsburg.
I think it's great for women to see a movie about a woman who changed the world without needing superpowers.
Felicity Jones plays Justice Ginsburg, a role she found, to say the least, challenging.
It was nerve-wracking at first. You know, you don't enter into that lightly. So it was about becoming her in every single way and doing justice to her story.
I ask no favor for my sex. All I ask of our brethren is that they take their feet off our necks.
The documentary RBG chronicles Justice Ginsburg's life from birth to her immigrant Jewish family in Brooklyn, New York, to her fights and legal victories for gender equality before the Supreme Court. That led to her appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court in 1993 by President Bill Clinton, and then her rise as a pop culture icon after publications and websites coined her as Notorious RBG.
Every time Justice Ginsburg wrote a dissent, the internet would explode.
Would you mind signing this copy?
I am 84 years old and everyone wants to take a picture with me.
Sue Cassidy has dedicated a box to her as part of the company's Phenomenal Women chocolate line.
She has her own box and we can't keep them in stock. They are just selling like crazy.
A year after the death of her husband, Justice Ginsburg spoke with VOA's Julie Tabo about her legacy.
I hope that I will be remembered as someone who loves the law, loves her country, loves humanity, prizes the dignity of every individual, and works as hard as she can with whatever talent she has to make the world a little better than it was when I entered it.
Associate Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg back at work just days after surgery for cancer. Well, that is our program for today, and that wraps us up for this week. Thanks so much for being with us this holiday week here. We will be back again on Monday, as always. We hope you'll join us then. And until then, take care.